It's truth time. It is Trunk Slamming Friday, and I know we have a lot of big things to get to, but you teed it up today, and I want, honestly,
I forgot you teed it up today.
Yeah, I played this morning.
And I'll call your dad. I have before.
You can. I'll tell you exactly what happened.
Two things I want to know. Did you fluff in the rough?
No, I did not.
No, you told me before you always do.
I have many times, but because you've been complaining about it,
so you
I'm
played
telling
it
you,
down.
I didn't. I played it as it lied.
Did you play 9 or 18?
No, we played 18. I was Koepka tee to green. Koepka. I was moving the ball around that course. Butter cuts off the tee.
Did you play
that's all you have. You don't move it around. That's all you have is a butter.
Did you play Dragger's
Course? Like, what, you have a soft draw on other holes?
Oh, man. You should have seen my ball movement. It was spectacular.
Yeah, I know it. It's left to right and fades, and it doesn't go anywhere else.
Tee to green, I was a 2 or 3 handicap. And my short game.
Come on. I'm going to call your dad.
Go ahead. Call him. Call him. Tee to green.
Let's cold call Bill.
You haven't even played once this year.
I know that. And that's what was so amazing. Tee to green, I was Koepka. On the green, around the green.
Yeah, you 175 yard tee ball.
You were McLennan.
You were McLennan. If you isolated from about 30 yards in, you would think I've never played the game before.
Oh, so you're saying after that it was garbage?
Oh, I was horrendous around the green. I shot an 89.
That's not bad.
Legit.
No.
Legit. I faded because we walked the course. I can't tell you how exhausted I am right now.
Well, why wouldn't you get a card?
I wanted to get a card, but it's his routine.
Rewinding. You did not shoot 89. 89 is for the guy that just hates saying he shot 95, and you shot 100.
I've never shot 100. Like, I haven't... You've played with me.
Didn't shoot 89. That's a good golf course. Cedar Bray is a good golf course.
Yeah, I understand that.
Anyone that writes 89 says
I didn't keep score. I was a 42 on the front, and I faded on the back. I was brutal on the back. I started double-double on 10 and 11, and then I started to get tired because we were walking.
Yeah, but how many times was your golf ball in the bunker and you were shooting 8?
I
said to your dad, just give me a double.
Never. I'm telling you.
Give me a double. You didn't putt out everything.
I'm telling you, tee to green, Dustin Johnson, around the green and on the green. I was a three-putt machine. I was a disaster around the green. But I'm telling you, if I hit putts, I would have shot an 82, 83 in my sleep.
Wow.
If I had a short game, I'd break 80 constantly. Constantly.
So off the tee, you were very comfortable.
Money off the tee.
Wow.
Not there was no, like, kind of gimme where it was like, give me a 6 when it was out. You didn't putt
out.
No,
I never did
Trumpster.
That.
Oh, so you played pro golf where you putted out.
Yeah, we putted out everything. Why would we do that? Do you ever do that? Do you ever actually putt out? If you have a 2-foot putt, you don't just pick it up and say, we're out of here?
No, but I think I think there were some holes where you were like, out of the hole, and you said, Dad, give me a 6.
I'm telling you, I never did that. I'm telling you. An 89 isn't, like, an impressive round. But
it
I haven't
impressive.
Played. I haven't.
That is impressive.
Well, I've shot a lot better on that course.
What's your best ever score when you were
79? I broke an 80.
You shot a 79
twice, I think, at Scarborough. I'm telling you,
Scarborough Bluffs, is that what they're called?
No,
Scarborough
Bluffs.
Country Club.
Yeah, it's like 10 minutes from here,
and it's a decent course.
It's a great track. It's my really? Type of track. It's not a long track. I don't bomb it off
course.
The tee, but
Muddy's
it's a great
a member
course.
There.
Yeah, Muddy's like Mr. Scarborough.
Oh, I know. He loves it.
Yeah. He gets right in there every tournament, every event.
The friendliest guy around.
Brian Mudrick is right in there. Yeah. But I witnessed a first ballot Hall of Fame golf guy.
Really?
Playing in the foursome in front of us. Somehow there were two singles that joined a double right in front of us, and we went off as a double behind them.
Yeah.
I saw a guy decked out in PGA Tour gear. Ricky Fowler with, like, the $250 Oakley glasses.
Just a hero. Hero.
Like, new glove for every round. And right before this guy teed off, I've never seen this on a golf course before. You've probably seen it. You play more than I have. I don't know if this is a new development or if this is golf guy taking it to the extreme. He pulls out two Allen Iverson arm sleeves and rolls a sleeve up on both arms.
Because he got bad elbows?
I don't know. I think because he just felt like that was the way that golf guy plays now in 2019.
Let me ask you this. What did the first tee shot look like? Was it just a
Tom Kite worm burner. It didn't leave the ground. I'm telling you, he got up, and this is the worst part. The guys that were playing with him just said, go ahead, hit another one. Like, no, refused. Wouldn't hit another one. Won't take a mulligan.
So you witnessed this like you and your dad were waiting?
I was right behind him. I was on a putting green, and then we were waiting for – they were going off at 7:54. We were off at 8:03, and this guy was decked out, and he hit one 50 yards along the ground.
Do you have a tough time, like – you're a good golfer. Do you have a tough time watching other people chop it around?
I don't, because I don't play with them.
No, but if you're sitting there watching this guy.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen an arm sleeve on the course?
No, that's Allen Iverson. Like, that's...
I've never seen it before on a golf course.
I've seen, like, you know how they put the... Like, there's like a...
Yeah, that's because you have arthritis or something.
Yeah, that's like it.
That's all I've seen.
They have them for the knee, the patella band or whatever on the knee.
That's it. I've never seen the...
Both arms, both. I couldn't believe what I was witnessing. This guy must have had $3,000 worth of gear, clubs.
So, do you think he was on a business? Like, was he?
No. I think he was a member, and he plays, and he just, you know, maybe got it together after that first shot. But it was a worm burner off one.
So you had a good day.
I had a great day.
How does your dad hit him?
Yeah, pretty well. He played all right.
Solid.
Yeah, not bad.
So it was just the two of you.
The two of us.
Did people try to join you?
No, but eventually the foursome in front of us let us play through, because and I had a hero.
I know
zero
you didn't
moment.
Like that.
I hate it.
I know.
I
you
hate
it.
It.
I hate.
Why?
Put,
because you gotta
rush.
They gotta watch it.
They're watching you,
and they're like, "Okay, man, if you guys want to go through, let's see what you got." And we put both of our tee shots on a par three into a bunker, and I got up there and I went from hero to zero so fast. I hit a great bunker shot. Like a spectacular, I'm not even lying.
Yeah.
It was a bad lie, like back of the bunker. I'm telling you, man, narrow green. And I put it like 6 to 8 feet past the hole. And I've got the Koepka walk, and I'm feeling it.
Yeah.
And I blast a putt like 8 feet past the hole coming back. And I just picked that one up. I did pick that one up. I'll
so
give you
then
that.
You're 92.
I picked that up because they were letting me play through. I'm like, I'm not going to, you know, give this a 360-degree triple read. I'm getting the hell out of here and up to the tee box.
Yeah.
We got a cold call Bobby Weeks again and say, what is an 89 for an AM that's just out, like, trolling around? He would say... It's a 97. Yeah, it's a 97.
No, I'm telling you,
Come on, dude. I know. I'm
a man of integrity.
Oh, yeah?
A man of integrity.
You picked up an 8-footer, probably a downhill curling sliding putt. Wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a tough putt coming back.
So, you could have easily 3-jacked it.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, I would have 3-jacked it. I'm telling you.
Let's give him a little bit of.
But, dude, you've been there. When you're playing through, it's let's go.
You just got to say, I'm out.
Yeah. It's not even about that hole anymore. It's about getting to the next one. And
well, the
off.
Worst thing is if you kind of like screw around and you get to the next tee, and then the group you're trying to pass is right on the tee with you saying, okay, where are you guys going?
Right.
Yeah, that's...
Right. If you all tee off together, like if you ever have one of those, we'll wait and we'll all go off together.
Oh, yeah.
They
give you the
darts.
Old come ahead.
Yeah.
And then they wait for you on the next tee. You are under the gun.
Under the gun. You better hit one far and straight, or else they're going to be immediately regretting the decision to let you play through.
Well, so anyway. As long as you're polite about it, like you say, you want to move through and get going, get ahead of them. Like,
by the way, send
us
a note if you've ever had the double playthrough where someone's played through you, but you got to go through again. It's had to have happened.
What do you mean? You got to go through... Somebody else again?
Well, no. You start slashing ahead of them, and then they're like, okay, let us through now. The double playthrough.
Well, they've caught you because you're so poor of a player.
Well, he just said him and his dad played through a group.
Right.
And if him and his dad started slashing it around...
And they had to play back through them.
Yeah, they're right on your heels. Yeah, I've never witnessed that before.
Me neither, but it's had to have happened.
Oh, I'm sure it has. Because it's an executive decision. You're like, all right, we'll wave you through. And then I think you realize pretty quickly, the guys we just let play through, they're horrendous.
By the way, when I'm golfing, I hate, as much as I hate waiting as on the group ahead, I hate the guy behind me. Like the guy that's just waiting.
Well, they're staring at you. That's pressure.
Can't do it.
That's pressure. Because you don't know them. you know they're judging you. They're watching you. You just judge the guy with the double, with the Allen Iverson sleeves.
Yeah.
You're judging. We're talking about
this
guy.
Call.
So he's feeling the heat. He may be a fantastic golfer, but he's like, that's Brian Hayes from Overdrive over there.
I didn't get that impression.
Maybe.
But yeah, maybe. You never know.
That's Hazy B. That's Dwayne Casey's buddy.
If I spray one here, he's going to talk about it. And sure enough, here we are.
We haven't gotten to the hockey game, the basketball game, nothing. We're talking about the Allen Iverson sleeve guy.
Right.
And he's probably in his car on the way home from the course right now after shooting a 79 going, man, that was Hayes over there.
That happens, right? Sometimes you just hit a bad one off one and then you get your game back together. It happens. You know, everyone's been there. Maybe he did shoot like a 78. The one shot I saw him actually hit.
Right. But it was
Tom
ugly.
Tom Kite.
It was ugly, though. Like, was his form any good, or you can't really?
I wasn't really. I'm not, you know, Harvey Penick. I wasn't breaking it down.
You're not Bob Woods.
Yeah, exactly.
Or Weeks, sorry. Bob Weeks. Sorry.
Anyway, we're tracking the Canadian Open. We'll go trunk slamming later in the afternoon. Game four of the NBA Finals tonight. You talk about a degenerate. I saw this just before we came on the air. David Perdom, who's a big gambling guy. We've had him on the show before with ESPN. Per executive director at Superbook USA, they just took a $182,000 money line bet on the Warriors tonight. Odds are minus 190. Some guy put $182,000 down on the Warriors, and if they win, he wins $96,000. That's a lot of juice. Minus 190. And
What I mean, his reasoning, Clay coming back, and it's kind of a pick 'em, maybe.
And a must win for a championship team, right? Like, listen, the Raptors, they're up against it tonight. If Clay's back and he's anywhere close to 100%, they probably should be underdogs tonight.
Yeah, you know,
they got their split. They got their game three.
Well, guaranteed split, you could sweep out of there if you have a fantastic. If you play like you did the other night, where everyone was fantastic, then
they got a great
coming
shot
up.
Tonight.
Absolutely.
No
great
reports
shot.
Of anybody hammering the opposite?
Well, I mean, that's where the money's at. You're getting plus money on the Raptors. That seems to be the wise bet for me. You know,
But you're not throwing $187,000 on it.
No, I'm not doing that. I'm not willing to put $182,000 on the Raptors to win tonight, but I might on them to cover the number. I think it'll be a good game tonight. You know, I expect it'll be a good game tonight.
Absolutely. It's going to be a great game.
As for that cup final last night.
It's good hockey.
Woo, man, it's been fun. Like, it's been every game outside of game three has been a close game. Last night was electric. I know here we are again with the officiating and all that.
Incredible, man. That was an incredible play.
Yeah.
By Bozak, you mean? Like,
yeah, like just the referee, you can't say that he was out of position, couldn't see it.
Just chose not to call it.
He blatantly just said, I don't.
I'm letting him play. And, you know, like Welcome came out afterwards and said, it's a judgment call by the ref, and the ref chose not to make that call.
Right. Hey, really, listen, there's no dancing around it.
The Bruins, and Cassidy was pissed last night. He didn't walk back. He kind of doubled down today, but said, we got to move on because they have to, or else they're done. Binnington was fantastic, too. Boston was a better team yesterday.
Yeah.
They all played him.
Yep.
But Binnington, this is the first time where, in this series anyways, where I thought he was the best player on the ice. Like, the Bruins in the first period, that was a game over if Binnington doesn't make three or four big saves in that first. But the one on Coyle in the slot, in the power play, like, the Bruins' power play actually had some good looks. They just couldn't find the back of the net.
Yeah. Well, and St. Louis finally getting kills, whether it's Binnington or
right.
otherwise.
Exactly, because they were at
kills.
68% or something. Yeah. But listen, they found a way to get it done, and it's been good hockey. And
I think with the play last night, you know, is that a penalty? Yes, I think it is a penalty. I don't think it's the craziest non-call we've ever seen. I mean, I do think the timing of it leads to the extreme reaction. Like, Cam Neely's going to kill somebody one of these days. Cam Neely should be in the Hannibal Lecter mask. Like, he shouldn't be allowed to be around other people. This guy is a lunatic up in the box. Like, it's crazy.
I've never seen that before. Oh, he whipped that water bottle.
I mean, he's done that before.
Oh, I'm sure he... Haven't you seen... Like, they sometimes...
It hit Fergler's nose on the way back or went on the ice.
But you've... Like, there's times... I thought... You said you were sitting down below, and he was giving
the kick. Myself and Duffy and Billy Dodson were sitting right in front of them, and they were kicking the wall.
Yeah.
Seabass yelling at players.
He's intense. Like there's no getting
around.
That's
what happens when you get to this time of year. But he was losing. I've never seen.
He's got zero. The hardest part, even when I was on that side, the hardest part is you have zero control. You're just sitting watching.
You're relying on the officials to kind of hook you
up.
Well,
at that point, but I'm saying you can be excited about the game. Even as a coach, the minute that the guys go out, it's like a parent sending the kids out in the world. Like, they're going to make their mistakes. Like, you can't be there to cover up for them. So in management, you're sitting up in the box. You have zero control. What you're going to do after that play is you're going to go charging down to the official's box and go, what the hell's going on? What's your guy doing? And Stephen Walcom's going to go, I'll talk to him. What do you want out of me?
Yeah. Well,
I'll talk to him after.
Bruce Cassidy postgame. Let's play this clip because it is a fairly explosive clip. Very emotional stance by him on the non-call, the Bozak trip on Achari that, you know, five seconds later it's in the back of their net. Here's what Bruce Cassidy had to say about a postgame.
The narrative changed after game three. There was a complaint or whatever put forth by the opposition. It just seems to have changed everything. I mean, the non-call on Achari, their player's on his way to the box. I mean, they're the only, it's right in front of the official. It's a slew foot. Our guy's gone. The spotter took him took him out of the game for a possible concussion. I mean, it's blatant. It had a big effect on the game. I mean, this has happened. I'm a fan of the game. It's the National Hockey League getting a black eye with their officiating this playoffs. And here's another one that's going to be talked about. I thought it was a great hockey game. That call probably, I mean, there's time, but it really made it difficult for us to get the win tonight. So I'm disappointed. So I guess to answer your original question, it was egregious.
And that is usually major fine.
I can't believe they didn't fine him. I can't, and I'll tell you why.
But it's because they know it was
brutal. They know it was a wrong call. That's why, or an on-call.
I think I've been thinking about this a lot. I wouldn't fine him over the it's egregious. I wouldn't fine him over the black mark comment, although I would be furious if I was Bettman. I'm looking at this again as the commissioner in the league here. You expect your coaches to represent the league and fall, on the sword for the league. The players you give a little bit more leeway to because the players are more emotional. They're the ones on the ice. The coaches get treated differently. We know that. I'm not necessarily surprised, again, he didn't get fined for that, although I wouldn't be happy. Like, we know we're getting crushed here, man. The officials are getting crushed.
Right.
It's not been good for us. Can you cut us some slack? But I would have fined him significantly for the first comment. When he said the narrative changed after game three.
But it's true.
What he's basically saying is he's intimating the league is pro St. Louis.
No.
The refs, that's exactly what he's saying.
No, he's saying they're responding to their complaints.
Exactly. So Craig Berube came out after game three and said,
I know that.
We are the least penalized team in the playoffs, and now we've got 14 penalties.
Right.
Go figure. And then all of a sudden, game four.
They're not pro St. Louis. They're responding to that complaint.
And I think he was doing was.
But if they've
doing
changed.
What Berube did.
But if they've. I think he's absolutely doing that.
Right.
But what I'm saying is his comment originally is highlighting. He's saying what I read out of it is.
Right.
The officials changed. The officials have changed. So if you're saying they're changed and they're clearly not going your way, what he's intimating is the officials have decided to change in favor of St. Louis.
No, it's the ultimate makeup.
That's what he's saying.
It's the ultimate makeup call. How many times have you seen a bad call called in the game and then the refs are like, man, we got to make up for that.
Right.
And boom.
Yeah, but that's the ref making the decision.
It's not the ref saying, I favor this.
But that's
team.
What Cassidy's saying.
But I think he's what he's doing is doing exactly what Berube did.
Right.
Advocating. So he's like, hey, it changed when they started complaining. Here's my complaint.
But here's the thing. Berube complained about his situation. Right. Berube's saying, like, to your point, he's like, these are the stats, and we're supposed.
Right.
Cassidy didn't say, hey, we used to get the most penalties called or something.
Right.
He is saying basically the league decided to take a shift and listen to Berube. That's the way I read it.
Well,
and if that's the case, you're intimating that the fix is in and the league has decided St. Louis needs to get more calls. That's not a good look for the league. Have a coach saying, well,
you're right.
You guys have decided that St. Louis gets to get all the calls, so what are you telling me?
Make
that
a good
a
point,
fix?
But the league has to wear that because
not
it's
publicly,
the refs that
don't.
Are making poor plays or non-calls.
Right, but not
so that's
publicly.
That's why he's not getting fined today because they're like, yeah,
well, I think
fix.
They're spineless, quite frankly. Like that.
But that's,
if
Craig
you're not
going to
fine a guy for that comment,
Craig
then don't
Berube
fine for
said
anything.
The same thing, just in different words.
But I don't think he did say the same thing. I think he was saying, listen, I'm talking about my team.
Right.
Cassidy said something changed within the series. He's right. saying well, he's, Berube
he
spoke.
Said that series is being called differently after they complained.
Exactly.
That's fair but to say, being, though, if that's the truth.
But if it's being called, that means something changed. Like, Cassidy is intimating that the league decided, you know what,
by the
Berube,
way,
you're right.
That's the loser mentality, though. You lose the game, you're like, oh, wow.
Right.
If they came back and stormed back, this would not even
of
be
course
talked
not.
About.
Absolutely. And
when you lose,
listen.
This is the big issue.
But I think he's also, this is his platform to, like, I'd take a $10,000 fine to try and get a call in game six.
Right. I'm
that's
surprised he didn't. I think he
I'm
was
saying.
Thinking that.
But that's exactly. Yeah. He's advocating. Like, he's going, okay, Berube was chiming in after game three. They weren't getting calls, too many calls against them. Here's
Berube
my turn after
one
game
goal.
Five.
They scored one goal.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and the fact of the
what
matter
game are you going to win with one goal?
Fact is, Achari was dumping that up the glass regardless of the trip. Like, that hasn't been brought up a lot. He wasn't making a play in the slot.
No, not at all.
He was
but you
dumping
have more...
it up the boards. Like the
irrelevant.
Well, yeah. But the point is, it might have been in the back of the net anyway. Like, even if he didn't trip him,
yeah, but
it could have been
guess
in the back
like
of
that.
The net.
You can't project and say, oh, that glass, that might have been off the glass, intercepted by Bomeister.
Yeah, it's...
Well, but he was dumping it up the board.
There's been plenty of missed calls.
How do you know? He got knocked on his ass.
No, he was shooting it before he got touched. Watch the replay. He was dumping it up the boards. He felt the pressure. Watch.
Yeah,
gone.
He's going to chip it.
And now he's chipping it up the boards.
But the point is, you can't effectively dump it off the glass if you're getting knocked on your ass.
I'm not
that's
saying
the
you can.
Point.
But listen, I'm not saying it
that
was a penalty.
That might have went into center ice.
It might have.
Yeah.
Yeah, it might have.
We don't know, but you...
This
he
is
was.
That's a totally different conversation.
Yeah, he was chipping it up the glass, but it's a missed call.
It is. I'm not saying it wasn't a
there's been missed calls throughout the playoffs, and it's how you respond. You can't. You got to suck it up. Today, Cassidy, it changes narrative because you can't look back. They're done. The St. Louis Blues win the cup if they win the next game. So the Boston Bruins can't go, okay, but yeah, in game five, you missed a trip on Achari. It's over.
Like, right, of course.
And he's doing what he can to advocate
as
so
should.
That doesn't happen. And Berube did it in game three. I think this is, I don't know what the word is, gamesmanship.
It is. It's totally angling and gamesmanship.
I think the organization, I guarantee you, Seabass and Don Sweeney would go, we'll write that $10,000 check.
That's what I'm saying. I think they're surprised that he didn't get fined.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, I'm surprised just for the league for them to, they're getting snowed in. And now their guy. And they've got 30 of them. The 30 coaches, they are told, you represent the league and don't ever forget that. We understand you're all going to be emotional. But coaches all the time, what do they always say? I don't want to get fined. I'm not going to give you that answer. He did give you the answer.
Well,
he said these guys, they decided to change the way they're officiating. Basically saying we're getting screwed because they decided St. Louis was getting screwed.
And it's just Craig Berube was a little bit more... diplomatic
a little bit more
in game three
right
I
have to go back and listen to Berube's to get an exact
he just gave stats he just said we're the least penalized team in the playoffs in the first three games we got 14 penalties
right I just go felt figure. Like again you guys are disagreeing with me that's
well,
fine
it's not
I'm just saying I personally heard that and I'm like that to me
you thought that was a little bit heavier.
It's like you're telling me the fix is in and that the refs were like yep he's right so now we're going to start calling more for St. Louis and I don't think that's a good
league
for a sport.
What I kind of thought was funny people were writing us like well, the Bruins got all the calls in the Leafs series. When? What call
well,
like that?
I don't remember that
I know,
at all.
But like
I do think it. No one's going to cry for the Boston Bruins.
No, not like in this they, market.
No,
not
in
at all.
General in the NHL. Like, Jeremy Jacobs is the most powerful owner in the league. Everyone knows it. They, you know, I don't have the stats to compare what they get away with
right.
compared to everybody
Everyone
else.
Everyone either gets screwed or gets away with right. stuff, depending on the eye of the beholder. If you're a fan, if you're a Bruins fan, you're pissed off today. If you're a St. Louis fan, you were pissed off when Timo Meier hand passes.
Yeah, everyone's been
like,
screwed.
It's unfortunately, it's happened in the playoffs. There's been great hockey, but the narrative has shifted back again to the refs. I you know what would be the cherry on top of all of this? Game 7, Stanley Cup Final, and we got a goaltender interference. That subjective call.
Well,
now I don't know if Boston's. I don't know if Boston's going to make it to Game 7. I don't know. They may have a response, but what I'm saying is that probably would be the cherry on top of everything that has been a little bit of a struggle, or more than a little bit of a struggle for reffing in the playoffs.
We're probably waiting for that.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a matter of time. You would think there hasn't been any. goaltender interference.
No, but there's been some. Obviously some egregious calls.
Oh, of course. And yeah. Now again, I don't think last night's was anywhere close to the like that. Does it pales in comparison to a hand pass or a 5 minute major?
You're right. What it was, it ended up being the game winning goal. Yeah. That's what it was.
Yeah.
Because if they lose 2-0, you're like, okay, that's a missed call. We're pissed off. But like they score a goal. And they're kind of back in it with about 6 minutes left. Like, there was plenty of time. It ended up being a bigger thing because they lost.
Mm-hmm. And that was the game winning goal. About it, too.
Yeah, and they actually technically deserved a better fate. I thought Binnington was fantastic. So, you outshoot a team 39 to, 22, I think. They outchanced them.
Yeah, but again, massively. The eye of the beholder in that game last night, I'll bet you if you reviewed the tape, there were a lot of things Boston did. And a lot of people are talking about Marchand and Bennett, where you're like, okay.
Yeah.
What goes around generally comes around.
Yeah, you're right.
And to your point, they can't allow it to...
No, to go to game six and to be looking back, then you're going to lose for sure.
Yeah.
Because your team will be focused on something that they can't control anymore. Instead of looking ahead and saying, hey, we got to try and get this back to Boston for game seven.
James Duthie is out there in the Bay Area. We're going to catch up with Duthie, get his take on game four of the NBA Finals tonight.
What's he know about it?
I'm excited about that game.
I can't wait for the game tonight. Tip off at 9 p.m. You can watch it on TSN. So
Duthie's I'll be pulling gonna be right into my driveway in Collingwood at 9 p.m. Mm-hmm. I can't wait.
I am jacked.
Do we know who's got the anthems and everything tonight or no?
I haven't seen anything.
Looked in on that?
Yeah, look that up, Grapple.
Well, it's kind
of
a
big thing. By
the
way, coming back here, you got to go Drake anthem.
Drake, I don't think sings the anthem.
He's not a singer. He's more of a rapper.
He can sing, but
Metallica just did the anthem. I'm pretty sure
Drake... Do you want him with his synthesizer to get up there?
Yeah, what's he going to do? I don't know. They need Burton Cummings with his...
Remember when he had the organ out?
The keyboard.
That was fantastic. What was that for?
Was it the 100th Grey Cup? 100th.
And he just sat down and started playing.
He started bombing on that keyboard.
That was outstanding.
Maybe my favorite anthem.
I would take a Burton Cummings.
Happily. Game five. He should be in the house. All right. Ray coming up just after 5. Duthie on game four tonight in the Bay Area. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right. We're getting some... just deplorable golfing stories sent in here. Just a guy tweeting in saying, I was playing a solo twilight round and I'm a chop. Caught up to a father's son. They offered to allow me to join them. I respectfully declined, but they said, okay, go ahead and play through.
And he started slashing around.
He said, my driver slipped out of my hand on the tee shot. And then I proceeded to shank the mully into the woods.
Ooh.
That's when you just leave.
Yeah, you
say, guys, I'll see you later. Thank you.
Kyle tweeting in saying there was a foursome that let our twosome go through on a par four. Both of us hit beautiful tee shots. We're feeling great. Koepka and Dustin Johnson type struts down the fairway. Get up to the next shot, and I thin one, just a laser off the yardage marker peg. And I have to walk right past them.
Not cool.
That's not good. Great tee shot, and you just skull one off the yardage marker. That's tough to do.
That is tough to do.
Very difficult to do. Anyway, keep them pouring in at Overdrive 1050 at Hayes TSN. James Duthie, what is Duthie? Just our host. Like, how do you put a title on Duthie?
I think it's called a big leaguer.
Swiss Army knife. Yeah. Jack of all trades.
Something big happens, he'll come, he'll mow your lawn, and he's the guy.
Don King. That's who James Duthie is, the Don King of TSN.
Yeah.
Whenever there's something big, Duthie will be there.
By the way, if anything big happens, he'll be sitting there.
Oh, it's just a matter of time.
That's right.
Yeah. Just a matter of time before I get the
boot. But he's going to come on and say, I don't do radio. Oh.
Here's James Duthie, a.k.a. the Don King of TSN. What's up, JD?
Guys. Tiring. I've been hanging out with my best buddy Bosch all week. We go clubbing most nights. Today we took a tandem bicycle, rode over to the Golden State Bridge, had ice cream together.
Would you shut up, Dave? Have you done anything with him? Like, have you had dinner, anything?
No. Oh, I had dinner in the media room. Does that count?
No.
But not once has he said, James, let's go, like, grab dinner or whatever.
No. But you know what? I know I've worked with you for 4 years. I don't think you've even asked me that. So,
yeah, come
that's
on.
A good point.
I lead a lonely life, Jeff.
Well, I will say this. You're hanging with the big dogs. I saw you with Shaq. You're with Bosch. Are they talking, James? Like, do you hear the players talking, like the inside scoop of what they think's going on here? Not like a panel discussion of breaking down X's and O's of what guys that played the game actually think might happen here?
Yes. I mean, I'm hesitant to say some of it because I'm not necessarily sure that I agree. And I'm not going to put words in Chris's mouth, but I've heard a couple of those guys saying they thought after game three that the series was over. That, you know, basketball's funny, and you guys can feel free to disagree with me, but I think more than hockey and perhaps other sports, teams sometimes know when they don't have it. And yeah, that's why you see a lot of, you know, when series get to 3-1 or whatever, that Bosch told me a story about the San Antonio series when Kawhi was the MVP, is that I think they won game one and then they lost game two and then they got killed in game three. And he said he knew, and they all knew in the room that it was over. Now, my hesitancy to say that is we don't know that Steph thinks that. We don't know that Clay thinks that or Draymond thinks that. They're certainly not saying that publicly. And I think that would be a foolish thing for anybody to think with this team over the last 5 years. But if it happens again tonight, then I think that's a fair assessment. It's apples to oranges, but Orlando in the first round, when they lost the two games at home, like they didn't even show up for game five. There's a tendency for when you know you've been defeated to start making vacation plans and say, see you later. I don't think the Warriors are there yet, but I have heard a few players say that.
Well, Vegas is changing their tune a little bit. I saw earlier this afternoon that...
God, you're massive on Vegas.
I love
you?
Vegas.
You must get like a...
Like it bases some of your analysis. Like you say, well...
Some of it.
But do you get alerts to your phone? Like, this has changed.
Sam Rothstein just calls me directly and just goes, hey, I've got a scoop down here on
the
strip.
No, but it really forms a lot of your opinions.
Yeah, a lot of times.
Vegas said this.
Well, because there's a reason that you know, those buildings are built. They usually hit the number on the head.
Yeah, they're pretty.
Well, I'm just saying, I find it intriguing because for the first time since May of 2016, which I'm assuming was when Golden State was down 3-1 against Oklahoma City, they are not the favorites to win the finals. The Raptors officially in Vegas, in some books, have taken over as the favorite. And I guess that shouldn't be surprising in the moment, James, because Toronto is up 2-1, and they have been the better team. And no one knows what kind of status Klay Thompson's going to have tonight. I think Vegas and other people are starting to believe that it's all a charade when it comes to Kevin Durant, and we will not be seeing him making an appearance. So, you know, at the end of the day, you got to feel pretty good about the Raptors.
First of all, they're 100% the favorites, and I think it would be foolish to think otherwise. And I, you know, I've watched a lot of the American hot take shows, which I usually try to avoid only because they're talking about the Raptors all the time. And you know, I've been shaking my head a little bit because the general consensus, and not all the guys have said this, but the Stephen A's of the world are, you know, if Durant walks back on that court, I don't care if it's 3-1, this series is over, they're coming back. I don't even buy that. If Durant was to come out tonight, I still don't think, obviously it's going to be tougher for the Raptors, but I think we have a tendency to, particularly the American media when it comes to Toronto, to just ignore what they see. I think in many ways they can't believe what they're seeing.
Yeah.
If you've watched the entire playoffs, they have been the best team. They dismantled Milwaukee. The defense is the best in the playoffs by far. And I think you're fooling yourself. It's such an easy tendency. Oh, it's the same thing when we watch, let's say, Pittsburgh win the Stanley Cup, and then we do the NHL preview show in October, and half of the guys pick Pittsburgh because all we know is what we've seen. And I think with the American media here, all they know is what they've seen from the last 5 years with Golden State, and they go, that's their crutch, and they don't look at the games to see how good the Raptors have been. I'm not saying that, you know, if Durant was healthy and Clay was healthy coming into the series, that the Raptors would have necessarily won. I think they would have had a shot. But I think people are just somewhat ignoring what is right in front of them, is that the Raptors are deeper and have been better. And you know, even if Clay's 100% healthy, which is doubtful, I still think they're the favorites to win, you know, two more games out of the next four.
With James Duthie, head of Game 4 tonight on TSN, tip-off at 9 p.m., Raptors-Warriors. Mark Stevens, the minority owner yesterday, that was a massive story, clearly. Fined $500,000 and banned for a year. And the players continue to talk about it. Do you sense that that story is now officially over, or could it carry over in some capacity tonight?
I don't think it carries over into the game whatsoever, but the interesting thing was they announced that fine / suspension a few minutes after Kyle Lowry was done his availability, and I don't know if you listened to that yesterday. I'm sure you saw the clips. Kyle was adamant that it should be a ban for life. And so, you know, maybe post-game tonight you get a reaction from Kyle that says that was not enough. It's a tough one. I'd have no problem if they force him to sell, and maybe they will do that quietly. Maybe the Warriors organization, which is a really classy organization, will say to the guy, yeah, the NBA gave you a one-year suspension, but here, we're buying out your share. See you later. I could see that possibly happening. You know, at the same time,
it's a little rich here. It's an idiot move,
but you can't. I thought it was, I don't know if it, who what was, one of the analysts I saw this morning saying, when, you know, you compare what Donald Sterling was, you know, a racist his entire life, you can't, and he gets the ban for life. You can't really compare what this guy did losing his temper for 10 seconds to what Donald Sterling was. And so, I think a year and $500,000, you could have made the fine a little meatier. The guy is a billionaire, and maybe he'll give another million.
Yeah, but James, what does that have to do with it? I mean, in any other walk of life, like a $5,000 donation to charity, why does it have to be $500,000?
Well, because he's a billionaire.
On being a billionaire. I think that's ridiculous.
I think they're judging him on being the owner.
Well, the owner.
The team. And they also feel like, okay, if we don't hammer this guy.
Oh, yeah, if that's Joe Blow off the street, he like.
Well, they wouldn't fine him because they don't have the right to fine him. The league, it's not, you know, they don't have the right to just fine.
$500,000?
I think it's a bit much to be like this guy.
What do you want? Oh, one of those $1,500 NHLPA fines?
Get him on the books.
I wasn't a billionaire. I was a millionaire, but $500,000 fine?
I have no problem with whatsoever.
It's a statement. Go ahead, James.
No, I was just going to say, but I agree that, you know, calls for a ban for life, that's a little bit excessive for one shove and a couple of swear words. But you get the point of why they had to come down really hard. You do have to protect the players under all circumstances. So.
Yeah, and especially from your own people. I mean, I think that's ultimately where it came from. And they're like, are you serious, dude? If we don't make an example out of you...
Yeah, I'll push you tomorrow. I hope I leave for a year.
Okay, go ahead.
$100,000 and gone? I'm done. I'll do it.
You'd pay $100,000 not to be here?
I will tell you to F off and push you tomorrow if I can leave for a year and it's only a $10,000 fine.
Well, it's not $10,000. It's a lot more
in
than
relative
that.
Terms.
Okay. Go talk to someone else about it.
You lose your $1.2 million salary as well.
That's
not
right.
Not just the fine.
Yeah. Really? That's your salary, you idiot.
You lose everything. How many Raptors fans are down there, James? It looks like there's a ton of them.
I was going to ask you guys, could you hear them on TV the other night?
Yeah, absolutely.
I could not.
I could.
The only time I heard them was during the Canadian anthem.
I could hear them in the building. We were in the I'm in the nosebleeds for the game. And I could hear them certainly at times when the crowd was really quiet and, you know, the lead got to 14 and 15 in the fourth quarter. And I wondered if it came through on television. I would say, I took that shot of them singing the anthem. There was maybe 100 there at the time. I didn't see a ton. The crowd was mostly yellow. It's not like I saw massive sections of Raptors fans, but there were definitely a few hundred here. And they were loud. And this is a loud building, but I was really trying to pay attention because when I was here a few years ago when San Jose was in the Stanley Cup final, we came over to game one of the final the year that the Cavs came back from the 3-1 deficit, and I thought it was one of the loudest buildings I'd ever been in, and so I was anticipating that the other night, and then, you know, the Raptors got up early, and it never really happened. There was a couple of times when they cut it to seven when Steph hit a three that it got pretty loud, but I did not see a moment the other night where it got as loud as either of the games in Toronto. And by the way, you know, the Raptors were taking a lot of heat, justifiably so, for the people not coming out at the start of the third quarter, the whole platinum section issue that's been forever a problem with the Leafs and the Raptors. There was the exact same situation here. Concession lines are long. There was a third of the crowd was not in their seats to start the second half, and the Raptors went on a 6-0 run.
I saw that.
So it's an issue. You know what? I mean, you can make – maybe it's a particular issue in Toronto, but it's an issue in a lot of buildings.
All right, buddy. Enjoy it out there tonight. We'll do it again at some point next week.
Okay, bud. I if you want – me and Boshy, Boshy's probably going to come up to my place.
We got
to
go.
Stay with a week in the summer. So if you guys want to – you know, go to Wonderland or something together.
Yeah, please do. Hook that up if you can.
All right. You're a loser.
Yeah, I'll talk to Boshy. He lets me call him Boshy. Nobody else does.
And
Boshy.
I like that relationship. Right. I see where this is going. You're a basketball guy now, and I love it.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, James. Yeah. See you, buddy.
Screw McKenzie.
James Duthie. Ray Ferraro coming up in about 20 minutes on what went down last night in Boston. The Blues are a game away from their first ever Cup final. Chris Bosch will join us in a couple of hours as well ahead of Game 4 tonight. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050. All right, Chris Bosch will join us in the 6 p.m. hour. Steve Phillips on the sneaky under-the-radar extension for Ross Atkins, the GM of the Blue Jays.
Saw that.
We'll get to that a little bit later in the afternoon. And don't forget, we're giving away a pair of tickets to Game 5 at some point this afternoon. The keyword was announced earlier this morning on First Up, and at some point between 5 and 7 p.m., we're going to give you the cue to call. And if you've got that keyword and you get in first, and you got to remember, there's a lot of people calling in. Yeah. A lot of people trying to get free tickets to Game 5 of the NBA Finals. Shockingly.
We want them.
Yeah. The amount of people that are like, I'm trying to get in. I know. Everyone's trying to get in. We wish we could give away 20,000. We can't.
Yeah, exactly.
But we'll do that at some point between 5 and 7. Ray Ferraro from the Cup Final coming up, looking back on Game 5 last night. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.